6-1-3 Wrestling. With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote.
Hey everyone, I'm Kyle.
And my name's Mark.
And you're listening to 613 Wrestling, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So, thanks very much for joining us today. So, just to break down, we're going to go through our highs and lows. We're then going to discuss and review the Elimination Chamber, which came up last Sunday. And we're going to close it out with our F5 and some little other closing remarks. So, we want to thank you again for taking the time to join us. So, Mark, let's kick it off. What is the first high you have for the week?
So, my first high was something that I was educated on not too long ago. It was a video, actually, on the WWE's YouTube channel announcing it's a little bit of an interview with what seemingly are five new agents in the back of WWE. Very exciting, because these five individuals have been known for their creative outlook on, you know, in-ring storytelling and everything else. So if it is as it shows, Sanjay Dutt has just signed a WWE agent. And most of them actually did say, I'm agent. I'm working with talent. So it's almost safe to say, but just want to make sure to cover my butt here. Also, Chris Parks, as you know, as Joseph Parks, Abyss from Impact Wrestling, who not long ago was just introduced into the Impact Wrestling Hall of Fame, is now a WWE agent. And especially when you see, honestly, if you haven't seen the video, go check it out. The glow in his face and the smile on his face. He is over the moon excited. Very excited for Chris Park and his opportunity. Sean Daivari, the older Daivari brother, been around WWE for quite some time, in and out. You know, one of those types of people where when we were talking about before recording the podcast, kind of same thing with Chris Park, where he's always been known so much more for his mind for wrestling than what he was able to produce in his career. Although two great careers, but the mindset has always been so much better. As well as we have, even though it's kind of been speculated, he's been around a little bit, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett, if you don't know, the creator and founder of NWA, TNA, Impact Wrestling, Global Force Wrestling, has been, you know, a former champion, multiple-time champion in WWE, WCW. He's been around the world. He's run his own companies. Now he's going to be a part of that in the back with WWE. As well as one of my favorite ones, and I know he's one of your favorite people, not just on Twitter, just
in life.
Interviews, in life. We are huge fans of Shane Helms. Is going to be an agent back there. If you've never heard Shane in an interview, if you've never checked out his Instagram, his Twitter, or whatever.
He's got his own podcast.
Hideaway
to Helms.
Hideaway to Helms. An amazing podcast. Check him out. One of the most brilliant minds for wrestling. Hearing him, you know, talk to Jim Ross, Stone Cold, Chris Jericho, and just knocking out about how he would look at things, how he would produce things, is absolutely great. So now to know that he's going to be a part of that with young up-and-coming talent is phenomenal. So that's a high for me. Those five, I didn't see it coming. You know, Shane kind of made sense. Jeff Jarrett, you kind of saw it coming. You've seen, you know, Shane and the Hurricane gimmick come in and out, but Shane's also had a lot to do with independent wrestling as well, you know, being at All In and so many different facets. So congratulations to those five. I'm really excited to see what types of, you know, roles they're going to play with certain talent. Are they going to look over certain tag team singles, SmackDown, Raw? You know, really excited to kind of see what they're able to produce and excited for the business. What's your first high?
Well, my first high, and I won't go too much into it because we're going to go into it later.
Right.
Was the two Elimination Chamber matches. I thought they were both extremely well done. They told a fantastic story. Absolutely. Each representative got in their spots. Nothing was overly ridiculous or overly gimmicky. We got to see their strengths, and they put on fantastic performances, the women and the men.
Yes.
And tag team women, or tag teams in general in Elimination Chamber is challenging. When you're putting on this quote unquote historic match, because we know it's whatever, it adds to the pressure. And I think they both did fantastic jobs, because fantastically is not a word.
There's a reason why at the end of the dictionary they have a bunch of blank pages, my friend.
But all in all, yes, we'll go into the review in the upcoming upcoming segment. But all in all, I just really enjoyed those two matches. They were definitely the highlights for me for the week and the actual pay-per-view.
No, 100%. I didn't have too many highs. My other high, and I know we're going to, we have it on tap to talk about it a lot, but I'll comment on very quickly now, but Kofi Kingston, my high. The brotherhood of New Day and how Xavier and Big E have Kofi's back through all of this. There's a YouTube video out there on Twitter with a nice little, 7 to 10 minute interview with the New Day after the Gauntlet with Kofi. And it's so emotional. It's so passionate. The support that Big E and Xavier have. Like, I watched it more than once because it gave me chills. If anything, it pumped me up to watch that video. Kofi's on an amazing run. I've always been a huge Kofi Kingston fan, from his times with Evan Bourne as a tag team, from his times where he was a Jamaican and he had an accent, all the way now coming through to, intercontinental runs, tag team runs with different partners, now to the big stage, where at Fastlane, he's going to be facing Daniel Bryan for the WWE title. The last time he had this opportunity was against Randy Orton many, many years ago, which obviously didn't go his way. That would be a cap off his career. I'm so, even if it doesn't go the way that we hope, I'm happy the fact that Kofi Kingston is a part of all of this. And that's why he's a high for me this week. Any other highs for you?
Yes. So on Saturday of last week, I attended a wrestling referee seminar.
Yes.
At The Keep, which is a wrestling school run by the Super Smash Brothers, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson. And they brought in 1-2-3 Serge St. Denis to walk through the basics of what it takes to be a referee. It was just a fantastic opportunity. I was super nervous going in because I wasn't sure what to expect. I wasn't sure who I was going to see there. Will I see anybody kind of like me who is just interested? Or am I going to see, am I walking into something ridiculous where it's like these guys have been doing it for years?
Right.
And this is just like a refresher for them. And I was a little bit starstruck. Cecil Nix also came out to help out.
That's cool.
Ray St. Jean was there.
Was Stu Grayson there?
No, he was not there. But Evil Uno was there.
There we go.
Heavily nice. Involved. A couple of other
mask,
wrestlers.
No mask. Kayfabe? Are we kayfabe in here?
Yeah.
Are we kayfabe in here? He had a mask on. Everyone.
Yes. and in the picture that was taken of the event, his mask is on. Let's leave it at that.
Love it.
It was really cool being able to listen to them and understand. I had some ideas already of the importance of the referee and what their responsibilities were, but to go into it further and talk a little bit about the psychology of a wrestling match, which is the stuff that really interests me.
Right.
And then, to the point where I'm watching wrestling now and I'm looking at multiple facets now. No longer am I just looking at the enjoyment of the match itself. I'm trying to pick up on things. Okay, well, what's the referee doing here? What are these guys doing? How do we get from here to there? And so, it was just a fantastic opportunity. Everyone was wonderful. I even got to get in the ring to do essentially a practice match, which was super nerve-wracking.
So were there two people putting on a match?
Yeah, Evil Uno and Cecil Nix.
That's amazing. How long was it?
Oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and so, Cecil Nix was trying to be the jerk, and you're trying to control things and remembering the little details and how, one of the things that Serge talked about was the importance of the referee being invisible when he needs to be invisible, but animated when he needs to be animated. So when the wrestlers are doing their thing, the referee needs to be out of the way. But when the referee is the only one in the ring or he's trying to convey something, how over animated he needs to be because not everybody can hear him. Right. So the fans need to be able to see. All in all, it's just a fantastic opportunity. I'm hoping that there'll be other opportunities to go out to The Keep and learn some more. And then you never know what goes from there. But once again, big thank you to Evil Uno, Cecil Nix, and Sir St. Denis for giving us this opportunity for us to learn a little bit more.
That's really, really cool. And definitely, hopefully, if, you know, I'm going to try to maybe scoop in with you there at the if there's another opportunity. And, you know, because you're totally right. When you look at it, and even with MMA, it's different, but you can't just be suffocatingly in there. You're in there to step in from afar when you're required to. We need to count of five to break. You know, if there's a submission or a lock on, you need to break the hold. You know, if someone's doing something that's deemed not necessarily illegal, but against the rules and there's a time frame, you need to be there too. You know, you need to kind of, you know, get the action together. So you need to be there kind of, like I said, from, you know, close from afar. But at the same time, you need to tell that story where you, and we've seen some, I've seen many, and I'm sure you have too, and we've all have seen some independent referees where they're overly characteristic or have no emotion whatsoever. You know, like if you know, like I always loved Earl Hebner where, you know, when someone kind of was like, get outside of the Undertaker, who could just look at him and he'll go scurrying and running. You know, I remember Triple H kind of being like, oh, get out of my way. And then he'd be like, what are you doing? Like getting in his face, being like, I'm like, look, like holding the shirt, like I'm the referee, yeah. Like almost like shoving the towel. Like, you don't touch me. You know, you gotta, the referee's a character. What type of character are you going to be? So that's super, super exciting. I'm really excited you got that opportunity.
All right. Those lows. Are our highs. What are the lows for you, Mark?
Lows. And I know we share this one, so I know we can both, we both kind of chime in on each, but if I have to see Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman one more darn time, I'm not even going to talk about this long. All I'm going to say is Elimination Chamber. We've seen Drew, Bobby, Corbin do this when they quote unquote, broke his arm. After you just saw, and we'll get, don't want to get too much into it, but you just saw the Bobby Leo Rush incident, and Leo is almost what's causing Bobby to be a heel, and then almost pushing Leo Rush, like you costed me my match. You almost saw that as a babyface move for him just to come right back in as a heel. Made no sense whatsoever. Corbin needs to go away. I feel like I'm repeating myself now each and every week, and I know we both agree on this. Corbin needs to go away, find a new, you know, learn a new move, a new coat of paint, as JR would say, and just the whole, it's just not working for me. You know, after he lost the GM spot, he should have taken a little bit of a hiatus somewhere, shape, or form, and come back with a different gimmick. And Braun, just figure it out, whatever's happening. So, What's your thoughts on that? Yeah, I know, I mean, you shared that one as well.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my my lows for the week. I mean, I need a Baron Braun match. Like, I need a punch in the face. I actually would rather a punch in the face than watch them go at it again because they aren't offering anything different. And then we had it again on Raw the next night.
Right.
Let's move on. We want to move on. Let us move on. But we cannot move on until you stop booking them in matches together unless it is something crazy like throwing somebody off of a building. Then, okay.
Joey Janela, Matt Danzig style?
Yeah, something like that. Other than that, I don't want to see it anymore. I don't want to see them involved in a storyline together. Just let them go their separate ways. Just stop making playdates with them.
Right. No, totally agree. Totally agree.
What's your other low for the week?
So my other low of the week, so this one I kind of thought about throughout. I don't have too many lows, which is good. And I know we've kind of taken a stab at it before, but the more I think about it, the more how like emotionless that Raw crowd was this past week. Triple H is standing there talking about like you are being treated to Aleister Black, Ricochet, DIY, nothing, just nothing. And sometimes we try to make excuses for them saying, well, maybe the arena wasn't mic'd up real well. Let's be honest here. It's a $1 billion company. They're mic'd up well. They do the same thing everywhere. I know different arenas catch different things, but even when you watch the crowd, there's like half the people are just sitting there on their cell phones, their head down, and no one's popping, no one's moving. You know, you have, you know, even though we did get a lot of, between Raw and SmackDown, a lot of rematches from the Elimination Chamber, but nonetheless, we got great matches. You know, there's some great performances put on both Raw and SmackDown, and that Raw crowd just given nothing. Don't get me wrong. We always talk about it. You buy a ticket. You can do what you want. And you can cheer. You can boo. You can do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting anyone. or being overly graphic. But to just go there and stand there and not cheer, you boo the bad guys, you cheer the good guys. That's what you do in wrestling. So I don't know, wrong night, wrong crowd, something about it. But that was a really big low for me this past
week. Yeah, I mean, even with you know, Becky and Sasha coming out with their, this was an opportunity for, you know, them to get a good cheer, and they didn't get that. You know, yes, they're not the strongest on the mics, especially in this type of performance where they have to be, you know, the groundbreakers and the, you know, the inspirers, and that's fine, but the crowd didn't even try and help them out. So yeah, it's unfortunate. My other low for the week is, and you briefly touched on it, is rematches from pay-per-views.
Oh, right.
We had three on Raw. We had, again, Strowman versus Corbin.
Yep.
We had the, we had two on Raw, one on SmackDown. The other one was Ronda Rousey versus
Ruby Riott.
Ruby Riott, and we'll talk a little bit later about what that kind of comes about.
A blink of an eye.
And then we had essentially a rematch of the Elimination Chamber in a 3-on-3 tag, which didn't really happen. I apologize. Was that on SmackDown? Or was it the women's? No, it was there.
Yeah, it was there.
Yeah. Even you're still, good. This was an example, but it happens all the time where we get these random rematches.
Totally true.
That have no bearing on anything.
Right.
It's not that it's like, oh my God, the cliffhanger from the pay-per-view. Let's finish this the next night. No, it's just, hey, let's just do it again.
Let's do it again.
And I'd rather see something different or carry the story further instead of just rehashing what we just saw, because what's the point?
It's true. It's very true. And, you know, they have been guilty of doing this for many, many years. For the longest time, they always have. You know, I remember they even actually used to poke fun at it where after WrestleMania, they would actually call it, like, their live event shows, but not their televised shows. They would actually call it the WrestleMania Revenge Tour, where all it was, like, if you saw Stone Cold and The Rock go at it for the next several weeks in all the towns, you would just see Stone Cold and The Rock go at it again. So, I don't know. It is a little redundant. It's a little, especially, too, if you paid a ticket to go to a Raw right after Elimination Chamber, you don't want to be standing there going, I just saw this. You know, I want to see something new and fresh. Road to WrestleMania, building new feuds, maybe ending a couple of ones like Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman. Like, let's just cut it out. Or at least if you got nothing for these guys, just, I don't know, throw them in the back, take a seat and sit on the bench. But no, definitely agree with that one. Side low, and I'm not even going to get so much into it because, like you said, we're going to get to it more later on when we do the breakdown of Elimination Chamber. Ruby Riott, quick loss, made no sense. She's better than that. She deserves more than that. She's an up-and-coming talent that is very talented. She's got the look. She's got the body of work. She's got the backing of the Riott Squad behind her. Don't know what you're doing. Don't know why you did it. Maybe there's a payoff down the road, or maybe we'll find out why, but to then just do it the next night, I don't know. Anything else in your list, Kyle? Highs, lows?
That is it. We are done for our highs and lows for this week. Upcoming is the next segment will be our Elimination Chamber review.
Yes. All right. Stay tuned, guys. Stay tuned.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back, everyone. Kyle, it's time to talk about what I'm sure everyone is here to hear us talk about. And that is this past Sunday's WWE Elimination Chamber. Overall, you know, before we kind of break down the matches, who won, what did we think about it? What was your thoughts on just the pay-per-view overall? And without getting too much into it, because we will break down match to match, what was your highlight of the night?
So I think, you know, as we talked about at the top of the show, you know, my highlight was both Elimination Chamber matches. I thought they were really well done.
Right.
For me, overall, the pay-per-view had the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
Very true.
It didn't have that kind of middle. There's either a match was really good or a match was lackluster at best. So that's kind of how I break it down.
No, very true. I think overall, you know, when you look at a packaged pay-per-view, definitely I would agree where, you know, the highs were the highest of highs from a very long time over the last, you know, dozen pay-per-views. And when the lows were low, they were pretty low, which we'll break down. But no, I think as a pay-per-view packaged in total, when you look at months ago talking about the switch being flipped, new opportunities, new champion, you know, newer champions, newer challengers. So I would just say I would definitely give this pay-per-view a thumbs up overall. So let's break it down. We'll start off with the singles match for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship, which this was on the kickoff show. Was 13 minutes and 25 seconds. Buddy Murphy, the champion, going against Akira Tozawa. Buddy Murphy walking away with the win, retaining his Cruiserweight Championship. Overall, I know when we talked about it last week, we kind of broke down, you know, usually they steal the show. Do we think they're going to steal the show this time around? You know, was Tozawa, you know, a credible challenger for the Cruiserweight Championship? Kind of came out of nowhere. Building those feuds, telling those stories to really help cascade the Cruiserweight Championship will kind of be the keys to success. So I would say very average match, nothing crazy about it and nothing horrible about it. Tozawa was great in the ring. I don't want to say it was his best performance, but once again, I'm happy that Buddy Murphy walked away with, defending his title. What was your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was kind of an okay match. Nothing special, nothing out of the ordinary. Buddy Murphy obviously winning makes sense, but you know, absolutely. I'm not a big Akira Tozawa fan. I find that he just doesn't get the crowd involved. He tries and they just don't react.
Right.
So all in all, for a pre-show, it was okay. It certainly wasn't the worst match of the night.
Hmm.
That'll come up a little bit later. But you know, I mean, it is what it is. And unfortunately for 205 Live, it's going to continue to be this way where we get one match, with not a whole lot of backstory. And so they have to try and do their best, but in this case it wasn't.
Yeah. You know, it's tough, right? Because they continuously kind of be lower on the card, kickoff show. Over the last several months, Buddy Murphy has had several different title contenders. And as we always talk about time and time again, you know, to really invest, you know, in someone challenging for that title, you want to build a little of the why. And you made a great point, you know, months ago where it doesn't always needs to be this incredible story, but give me a little bit of reason. Give me a little bit of drama sometimes. And especially when you're looking at the road to WrestleMania, if anything, everyone else should be, you know, going after each other, trying to obtain the rights to face Buddy Murphy. So hopefully at the road to WrestleMania now, you know, hopefully 205 Live WWE do a really good job at, you know, determining who's going to be the person to go into WrestleMania and, you know, potentially, by the looks of it, I don't know why Buddy Murphy would lose now, but who's going to be the one contending for that title. All right, so up next, it was a match that kicked off the actual pay-per-view itself. It was the first ever, quote-unquote first ever, WWE Women's Tag Team Championship being granted in an Elimination Chamber match. So we had the team of the Boston Hug Connection, which is Bayley and Sasha. We had Carmella and Naomi. We had Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I don't really think they call themselves Absolution anymore.
No, they have another name, but nobody ever uses it.
Whole other name, don't even really remember what it is. We have Nia Jax and Tamina, the Iconics with Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, and the Riot Squad with Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan. Obviously, you know, the Boston Hug Connection walked away with the win, becoming the first ever. All right, I'm going to stop saying first ever. That's a promotional thing. Walking away as the WWE, you know, Women's Tag Team Champions. We kind of predicted this last week. We know we kind of talked about a little bit of a, you know, what we thought was going to happen versus what we hoped would happen. Both of us kind of came in saying that we hoped, you know, Bayley and Sasha would walk away with it. Wasn't the ending that we kind of thought. I didn't think that Mandy Rose and Sonya were going to get as far as they did and be a final two. Once when I saw, you know, Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan get eliminated, not early, but kind of midway through the pack. I definitely didn't see that coming. So great match overall in my books. It was 33 minutes long. So good long match, almost as long as the men's one. What was your take? What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? Did they make the right decision? Would have you done anything different?
You know, I really enjoyed the match. I thought they told a really good story. I thought the wrestlers took risks in the right spots. None of the big spots. They didn't do any stupid, like, triple, you know, arm hooked suplex thing. And
true.
And, you know, each wrestler had her opportunity to shine. You know, I just enjoyed it. And I was a little bit surprised that I was going to enjoy it as much as I was, just because I didn't really enjoy the last Women's Elimination Chamber match.
Right.
But I thought this time round, I thought everything made sense. Ultimately, you know, Bayley and Sasha are probably the best choice to host the belt. I know that on Raw the next night, they struggled to try and get the crowd behind them, but I don't think the crowd was really into it at all. Right. So I don't really fault them for that. But I think it's really going to be what they do with the belt that's really going to matter now, as opposed to just talking about it. So, you know, all in all, I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was a great one to have. And in the end, I knew it was going to be Raw that was going to win, and I figured it was going to be these two. So, yeah, I mean, I'd probably do the same thing.
No, it makes sense. I completely agree. And, you know, and definitely, you know, commenting on that, the crowd on Raw definitely wasn't a Bayley-Sasha thing. It was a crowd thing, you know, a locational circumstance. But no, the right team won, you know, because I really think, well, when you look at it, they've kind of, even though Bayley and Sasha are newer to the industry in the female ranks, but they've been around a little bit, you know, longer than most, even though they're all kind of new over the last couple of years. But definitely the right choice, where you really want to think, how do you want to kick off? And at Elimination Chamber, that I almost feel if they made any other decision other than the Boston Hug connection, that crowd would have been super upset. And, you know, they were very much behind it. A big pop near the end, once when they became the final two, the crowd kind of had that feeling making it new. If you would have had, you know, Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan as one of the final four or final two teams, I think it would have been a little bit more up in the air, because you can kind of see the Riot Squad have been so dominating over the last several months. But once you saw it was Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville at the end, you know, not to discredit them, but you kind of knew it was going to be the Boston Hug connection. So great match overall. Loved it. Great way to kick off the pay-per-view. And to your point as well, agree. Definitely setting the bar. And even though we haven't had a whole lot of female Elimination Chamber matches, has set the bar so far versus the previous years. All right, up next, second match of the main card, the Usos, Jimmy and Jay, defeated The Miz and Shane McMahon to become the new WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champions. The match was 14 minutes and 10 seconds long. Obviously, McMiz's reign wasn't as long, coming from the Royal Rumble till now, only one pay-per-view. I'm very excited to hear what your thoughts of the match are on this whole thing.
Well, I'm happy that the Usos won, because I can't stand Shane McMahon. I don't like the constant need to jump from the top rope onto an announce table. I just, you know, when you do the same high risk move over and over again, people just, it stops being exciting.
Right.
I don't know where they're going with the story now between The Miz and Shane. I still feel like there might be some sort of heel turn for Miz. I don't know. I really don't know. All in all, it was, for me, wasn't the best match I've seen. I was just happy that the Usos won, so that hopefully they can move the belts back to the tag team division and not have Shane involved in it.
No, totally agree. And, you know, very, very, very important comment. And I really agree with the whole Shane McMahon and the table spot. And just, I get it. A lot of wrestlers have those specific move sets that they do. You know, we talk about John Cena and the five moves of doom, now the six with that whatever punch he does. But yeah, it's just, you know what he's going to do. You know he's going to, you know, quick box you in the corner. You know he's going to go coast to coast and he's going to jump on a table. Very predictable for Shane McMahon. It is good to see a legitimate tag team take that title, especially the Usos. One of the best tag teams, not just in WWE, probably in the world. Where do I think this goes from here? I thought about it. What have we saw? So we've seen The Miz and Shane butt heads, you know, for many, 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 many months before. And then it turned around, we're after the whole cup thing and Shane stepping in and Miz kind of saying, you know, you kind of helped me become the best in the world. We've watched the last couple of months where it was The Miz trying to get Shane's attention, friendship. I want to be a tag team. We could be really good. I feel like now we're going to be on the road where The Miz is going to beg. And I think Shane's going to start being a little resistant, because I think Miz is going to become very obsessive with everything. I think it's going to lead to a Miz versus Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. Not that I want that to happen, but I just think now that the title pitchers seemingly have a spot in it. I know a year ago, even before this podcast, we were talking about, excuse me, maybe seeing The Miz, you know, maybe challenging for the world title at some point, you know, at WrestleMania or sometime soon. Didn't happen, but that's my prediction, is it's going to go down a road, the Miz and Shane. You know, Miz will be very resistant to the Miz, and the Miz will become so obsessive, they're going to find their way as a match at WrestleMania.
I can certainly see that happening. I mean, you need to fill 7 hours of wrestling. I get it.
Yeah.
But I could fill 7 hours of wrestling with anything better than that.
It's very true. Very true. Hopefully that's another example of what I think is going to happen versus what I hope doesn't happen. All right, up next, after that match, we had Finn Balor defeat... I was almost going to call him Walking Armageddon. But you know what? I'm going to call him Walking Armageddon because that's who he is. Bobby Lashley and Lio Rush. It was a handicap match for the Intercontinental title. Went 9 minutes and 30 seconds. I didn't see this coming, to be completely honest. I know we kind of both talked about it where if he was going to lose it, this could have been, by Lio Rush being a part of it, could have been the catalyst why. So it kind of ended up that way. But I still thought it was a little too soon for Bobby to, you know, to lose the Intercontinental belt. What's your thoughts on this? Are they going to face again? Is Bobby Lashley going to retain the Intercontinental title at some point? Or do you think he's going to move on to something greater?
You know, it's tough. I mean, I wasn't really a huge fan of the stipulation of the match. You know, Finn's in a tough spot because he really should be facing guys like Seth Rollins, guys who can put on a much more challenging match itself. You know, Bobby's a strong guy. And so, and Leo's a moth, as his tights say. but I wasn't surprised that he beat Lio Rush. I wasn't surprised that Bobby took out his frustrations on Lio Rush.
Right.
I was a bit surprised to see Lio Rush back on Raw on behalf of Bobby. You know, I didn't really care either way for this match. It just wasn't one of those ones that I was excited about. I would have been probably more excited had it been maybe Finn versus Lio and not Bobby, or Finn versus Bobby and not Lio. I don't like the stipulation handicap match, or I would have rather a triple threat.
Right.
And then maybe Lio try to pin it to steal the Intercontinental. I would have preferred something like that as opposed to the handicap. Plus, I saw the handicap match live.
Right. Now, I know we didn't talk about it last week, but did the match kind of look similar to the live match?
To be honest with you, I don't even remember. The outcome was different.
Outcome was different?
Yeah, because they're not going to give up the belts on a house show in Ottawa.
Right.
So, you know, maybe Madison Square Garden or something like that, but definitely not in Ottawa.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I think that this one's hard to chew on because of the fact that, you know, surprisingly, we didn't see it coming where Finn Balor was going to, you know, become the Intercontinental Champion. I would have said that if this was going to be Finn Balor's moment to win it, you should have built this to WrestleMania. Imagine several more weeks with some really good build, some really good heat and storyline, Bobby Lashley versus Finn Balor. And even if it's in this triple, you know, this handicap situation, you know, Finn winning it so close to WrestleMania, it just seems like a moment that was not, I don't want to say wasted, but almost wasted that you could have had it. So, you know, is he going to get it back? Are they going to go back and forth? Is Finn going to defend it against someone at WrestleMania? I guess we'll see in the near future. But yeah, same here. I wasn't so hot or crazy about the matches myself. Next, the longest match of the night. Ronda Rousey and Ruby Riott for the WWE Raw's Women's Championship. Ronda Rousey with the win. 1 minute and 40 seconds into the match. Absolutely burying Ruby Riott. Thoughts?
So, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show with our highs and lows in this, you know, we had a rematch of this match on Raw. And Ruby put up a much better showing, which makes this one all the more stupid. I squash matches for championships in pay-per-views is a waste of my time.
100%.
It's a waste of everybody's time. The only redeeming quality was Becky coming out and kicking the crap out of the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, like, what's the point? And I really like Ruby Riott, and I think that she deserves to have a much better showing. I feel like Ronda Rousey's better not having the belt. I think that's better for her and Becky's story for her not to have the belt.
Right.
This was just like, other than Becky coming and taking the the crutches to the two of them, and she did bust Ronda open. Yeah. So at least there was a little bit of that. But other than
and destroyed Charlotte's arm.
Right. So that was the highlight of the match. That wasn't even in the match. So to me, I could have done without this situation. I would have rather had a longer match and then Becky get involved or Charlotte get involved than a squash match. It just seems ridiculous.
Well, I think it doesn't make sense in the, you know, squash matches have been around for a very long time when it is such a high caliber person, a wrestler, a champion going against maybe, you know, a very mid card or a low carder or, you know, a local talent or something or other. You know, the second this match ended, right where my brain went was, okay, well, not long ago we saw Charlotte versus Ronda at Survivor Series. And Charlotte, although didn't win the match, but beat the heck out of Ronda. Not long ago we saw Ruby versus Charlotte, and Ruby gave it to Charlotte big time. But Ronda's demolishing her in like a minute and 40 seconds. It doesn't make any sense. Ruby's better than that. She deserves more than that. She's a future champion. And it just has no place. And I would have much rather you come up with some kind of a storyline where one of them's injured and couldn't even, you know, face each other than have a match this short. Whether it was timing or something.
Well, it certainly could be timing. The pay-per-view was pretty damn short.
Seriously. But for whatever reason, I don't know how pre-planned that was, but I really think it was the wrong decision because to your point exactly, the next night on Raw, you know, Ruby's taking it a lot more to Ronda. It doesn't make any sense. So do better. Do better, WWE. All right, so the second last match of the night, your favorite match of the night, our favorite feud, never, Baron Corbin defeating Braun Strowman in a no disqualification match. If you close your eyes and watch it again, well, it'll feel and it'll sound like several months ago when the exact same thing happened, when they broke Braun Strowman's arm, where you had Bobby Lashley coming in, Drew McIntyre, and Baron Corbin essentially doing the same thing. So we've seen it. They've rewritten it again for whatever reason. This time around, different story where Corbin with the win. I don't even want to say what did you like about the match. What was your thoughts? And does this go anywhere? Or is this a way to punish both of these guys for maybe something they did or didn't do?
So, you know, I think the one and only redeeming quality of this entire match was putting Braun through two tables. And yes. How cleanly he went through the tables. Very that, true. I watched it. I was like, okay, that's impressive. Other than that, I couldn't care less about this match. I'm tired of these two. These two aren't going anywhere as long as they stay together. We saw it. And then, you know, like I said, again, this fits in with the pay-per-view rematches. We then saw another match the next night, a table match in which Braun then defeats him. Like, and then you have this weird trio that, you know, would be better suited prior to Survivor Series, not leading, you know, rolling up to WrestleMania. I can't see Braun being on WrestleMania card other than the Andre the Giant Memorial Tournament, because with this stuff, he's got nothing. He's going nowhere. He's clearly pissed somebody off in the back.
Yep.
And, you know, he needs to figure out something else. He needs to go back to his comedy spots or... That's really the only option he has in order to win because the crowd doesn't want him as a bad guy. They want him as the dominant good guy, beating up all the other bad guys. But I mean, this is just ridiculous.
No, it is. And you know, you don't know unless you work there and you're part of those conversations, but word has it that Braun Strowman really, really, really has upset some people in the back. You know, we talked about last week, or once again, it's completely rumor. It's not fact. Anytime we report on these things, we know we're not part of the backstage. It's simply what we hear. So it could be right, could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But apparently Braun Strowman has, and by the way, everyone, we have Kyle's dog Bruin here. And if you heard that, a couple of horns in the back, that's him. Just, it's a large dog too. Say hi. Say hi, Bruin. Say hello to everyone. Come on. No? All right. Anyways. But no, it's just, clearly he's upset someone. And, you know, you go from the rumor had it that he was going to win the Universal title to being literally pulled out, where we all thought it was a storyline. But then, no, he's actually pulled out. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a part of the match. Braun, probably not hearing this, but seriously, get it checked. If it is something you're doing, figure it out. The universe loves you. Everyone loves you. You are one of the most dominating big man forces in a long time since the Big Show 15, 20 years ago. And we want to see you as a champion. We want to see you dominating each and every week. Don't get me wrong. I always like seeing Baron Corbin get his butt kicked. But at the same time, like, we've seen this over and over again. This is a perfect example of, what do we do with these guys? Well, we've seen it a bunch of times. So here we go. Just give it to him again. Same outcome. So 10-minute, 50-second match. No disqualification. Double table smash. No botchamania that night. A clean table go through. Corbin with the win. Last up, we do have our main event. I know this was a big highlight, Kyle, for you and I. We kind of talked about it at the beginning of the show when we're looking at, talking about our tops of the weeks, our highs and lows. We had the Elimination Chamber for the WWE Championship being represented by SmackDown. We had Samoa Joe, Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, and the WWE Champion Daniel Bryant, with the addition, the last minute addition, by a man that lasted over 60 minutes in the Gauntlet match the previous week on SmackDown, and a guy that stole the world this night, Kofi Kingston. I'm super excited, Kyle, to kind of hear your breakdown, your take. Who did you like in this match? Where were the spots? Was Daniel retaining the right move? Is Kofi going to WrestleMania? What are your thoughts overall?
You know, I really enjoyed the match. It had a lot of physicality, especially with Kofi, which I was surprised. I honestly thought they were going to pop at one point in time when they were smashing each other up on top of the pod. I thought they were going to break the plastic. Not that they were going to fall out, but I just, that's how hard they were hitting.
Right.
I thought each person represented themselves well. I mean, Jeff Hardy was kind of not insignificant, but he didn't really bring a lot, but that's like where Jeff Hardy's at nowadays, right? He doesn't really have,
he's happy to be here.
Yeah. I thought AJ Styles was able to get his stuff in, did really well. I enjoyed that Randy Orton got the RKO in on AJ Styles, a surprise.
And an actual classic out of nowhere.
Yeah. I thought everyone did well, and I like that Rowan didn't somehow get himself involved.
Good point. Very good point.
I thought allowing Daniel and Kofi to go for an additional 12 minutes, just the two of them, speaks a lot, and I thought it was really enjoyable. It really built up, because you could tell the crowd thought, there's a chance that Kofi might win.
Yep.
This is a legitimate chance, and they were really into it, which you could feel, and you were really hoping for it. I think Daniel makes sense to be the victor.
100%.
If he hadn't replaced the belt, then I thought any one of them could have won and it would have made sense.
True.
But because he replaced the belt, there's no sense in him instantly losing the belt the first opportunity.
Right.
So, So I thought I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. And, I just didn't need to see it again on Raw, but other than that, I really enjoyed how we got this match in, and it was a great way. And it wasn't excessively long to the point where it was like, oh my God, this is going on forever.
No, 110% agree. And and this was a treat. And what I love about wrestling, what I love about WWE is, their ability to, they don't always get it right. And they'll be the first ones to tell you they don't always get it right. But I'll tell you, just like we talked about the whole Becky thing, WWE didn't make Becky where she is now. This grew naturally. This Kofi thing, it was an opportunity. I could almost picture in the back at one point, they were like, ah, Mustafa Ali's out. Okay, well, we need someone high flying. Well, excuse me, who else are we going to get? I don't really know. Well, Kofi. Like, just pop Kofi in. Like, Royal Rumble guy, big moves, big spots. He can save the day, let alone, even though Kofi's been around for a long time in the WWE, has held many tag team championships with different partners. I'm just trying to remember. It was Evan Bourne and Kofi Kingston as the Raw tag team champions years ago, and they were a great team. But you've seen him in so many different facets. He's had accents. He's had no accents. But to see him now after all these years, not only did he keep up, and don't get me wrong, we're looking at, funny enough, like Daniel Bryan you know, Randy, AJ, Jeff, Samoa, and Kofi. It's not like they're not all young bucks or anything. You know, they're quite tenured in the wrestling business, but he held up like he ever has before. I was so like, I forgot to breathe at some points watching the last 12 minutes of the match. And that's a really good point that you bring up too, that I really loved, is usually when it's the last two, you're a couple minutes away of just cutting it close. There's a close to something, you know, like a Royal Rumble. Last two doesn't last another 20 minutes. It's about another 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and someone gets eliminated. This one you didn't know. And even though when you're like, okay, it's Daniel and Kofi, Kofi's not going to win the belt. But then there was points where you're kind of like, is he? Holy, that story they told where it was literally Daniel Bryan understood that he was against a force in there and someone that had such passion and wanted it. So he had to play such defense, and Kofi did not want to give up, you know, to the point where, and he sold that running knee like crazy twice. But Kofi Kingston, since after that, and you see it on Twitter, you see it on social media everywhere, Kofi Mania. Now let's ask the question, and I ask you, if you saw Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania for the title, would you be mad?
So we're seeing it at Fastlane.
Seeing it at Fastlane.
No, I'm not going to be mad. I think, realistically speaking, if it's as long as it's not AJ, and frankly Jeff, because I'm not a big Jeff Hardy fan, and only AJ because we've seen it before.
Right.
If we had Joe versus Daniel, I'd be okay with it. If you had Randy versus Daniel, I would be less than okay, but I think I'd still be okay.
Because you know they put on a great match.
Yeah, and if we see Kofi, if Kofi wins at Fastlane and the rematch is at WrestleMania, I'm okay with it. If he loses and then he has a rematch, then I'm probably not okay with it.
Right.
But, you know, I think that would allow the story to be built going into WrestleMania, because at this point in time, if Kofi doesn't win, you're looking at 4 weeks to build a new story for Daniel, and that's going to be a little tough. Without just throwing something together at random.
No, very, very true. That's a very good point. What I would have rather seen is, now there's a story to tell when you have someone that's winning, but then losing the big matches, but winning, but I think Kofi's in a great spot because he didn't win the big one, but he's winning everything else. You know, he's been a winner. You know, he went deep in the gauntlet, didn't win, but was very impressive. I think what I would have rather seen is that Fastlane have something put together, some type of match, no matter, maybe it's everyone minus Daniel for the number one contender at WrestleMania. And maybe between now and then, Daniel's like, well, while I wait for these guys to determine who's going to face me, you know, I'm going to entertain someone and, you know, who's going to face me at Fastlane. Have some fun with it. But now that you're going to see it, I think if done correctly, you can have it where maybe almost Kofi's going to win, but he gets screwed. So it almost gives the, I hate calling him the authority, but the authority, you know, going like, well, hold on here. He was going to beat you. Who wants to see him get another crack at it at Mania? If there's a way to do it where he doesn't win at Fastlane, because I'm going to tell you, if Kofi Kingston's going to become the WWE champion, it cannot be at Fastlane. It has to be at WrestleMania. Because not only would that cap Kofi's career, but that would rewind, talk about flipping the switch. I have so much more belief now that they're creating opportunities. And I don't know. I love the match overall. I love the, even if he doesn't do it, the thought of him getting it is awesome. But overall, that's my take. And that's our take. Any last minute points on Elimination Chamber?
Nope.
All right, cool. Well,
I think we're like 2.5 weeks away from Fastlane.
Fastlane, yeah. Very, very quick coming to the next pay-per-view. So what we'll do is we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to come back to our favorite segment, your favorite segment. Fifth week in a row, we're going to go through our F5 Fabulous Five of the Week. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back, guys. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for waiting. 1 second for you, 5 minutes for us. All right, we're here in our last segment tonight. So I know we've been only doing this for a couple of weeks now, and I'm really intrigued to kind of hear your guys' thoughts too, because when we created the F5, Fabulous Five each week, it's to really highlight who we think, not what everyone else thinks, not what the media thinks. It's specifically Kyle and I and our thoughts on if we had to say who the top five of the last week were, who impressed us the most, because that's the biggest thing as a wrestling fan. It's about how you feel. And if you like something, it doesn't matter what everyone else likes. So whether you, we'd love to hear whether you agree or disagree with us. So once again, just wanted to promote our social media accounts, 613 Wrestling on Twitter, 613 Wrestling on Instagram, which we have been a lot more active on. And we've been getting some cool comments, a couple of good likes, and a couple of new followers, which has been really, really cool, as well as our YouTube page, 613 Wrestling, where Kyle recently has actually uploaded a cool amount of new videos.
Yes, the Elimination Chamber previews. And we got some views. Thumbs up. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
Yeah, really appreciate it, guys. You know, we know we're small but mighty. You know, we're not getting hundreds and thousands of downloads or listens. But at the same time, when Kyle and I really started this, don't get me wrong, we want to get our podcast out there and grow our social media, but not just because it's all about numbers for us. It's because we want to share our thoughts on wrestling with all of you. So if you have a friend, a family member, or someone that you work with that really likes wrestling or really just likes random podcasting, you know, let them know they can check us out at 613 Wrestling. And our podcast is on all types of, did you know we're on Spotify? I still can't believe we're on Spotify. We do record this on Anchor. Anchor's been an amazing device of us to record our podcast. And it also goes through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all of your popular podcasts all around the world. So thank you again for all the support. So getting back to the F5, Fabulous Five. This week we have a five. We like the five. Kyle, who's number five?
So on number five, so I will tell you, we found a little challenging to find a solid five. I think as you're gearing towards WrestleMania, things close in a little on highlighting kind of the same people.
Very true.
There were some people who had really good matches, but I wouldn't say there's anything groundbreaking.
Right.
So for us, number five was Dean Ambrose, which I think you would think was weird. However, the writing is on the wall that he's not coming back.
Right.
And I think that's okay. What I appreciate and what we think was good is that he's still there to help out.
Yeah.
So he's sending a message to Seth. He put up a really quick but solid comedic spot with Seth about
the backstage.
You know, the backstage stuff.
Where were you? Why did you have my back out there? What are you, nuts?
Yeah.
That look on his face and you heard the crowd pop?
That's it. So he's doing what he can to help out.
Yeah.
And he's still putting on decent matches. He's trying to get the rest of the talent over, which I have to appreciate because there isn't 100%. Really anything else he can do given the short period of time. And this is really what makes the most sense.
No, totally agree. And, you know, I know we talked about a little bit ago is, you know, not renewing his contract in April. Is it a work? They've never, I don't know in the history of WWE, WWF, I don't know if they've ever announced. The last time they announced someone was not going to renew their contract, but continued to be a pretty key part of a show with CM Punk. You know, when CM Punk, quote unquote, wasn't going to resign, he was going against John Cena at Money in the Bank. The whole point was, I'm going to beat your boy. I'm going to beat your poster boy, John Cena, and I'm going to take your WWE championship and I'm going to leave with it. And maybe I'll bring it on another show. You know, it was a whole thing, and apparently word has it that CM Punk resigned, but he only resigned that night. So there was a little bit of validity to it. But no, I think it's tough. I like Dean Ambrose. I think he can play a key part. Now, once again, in the world of territories and wrestling, would it hurt for Dean Ambrose to maybe go and, you know, do something different and maybe come back later? Sure, 100%. He talks about how he doesn't like the hokey crap. Totally get it. You know, his personality doesn't show that he really likes that. He's always had a hard demeanor, a little bit of a Brian Pillman mixed with a Rowdy Piper. So, but no. So excited to see where it goes. Is he going to play a key point in anything in WrestleMania?
No, I can't imagine. You know,
can't imagine that he will, but very excited to see him on this week. Kyle, who's number four?
So number four is the man, Becky Lynch. While not wrestling, she has still made that impact. What is it about Becky Lynch this week?
So for me, you know, I like unpredictability. You know, when you look at, you know, even just talking about Dean Ambrose and his contract, is he really not coming back or is this all a work? I don't know. We're going to find out in a few months. Is Becky really injured? Did she really lose? Yes. You know, in storyline wise, she has lost her WrestleMania spot. But is it really only going to be, you know, Charlotte and Ronda? Is it really only going to maybe be Becky, Charlotte, Ronda? You know, or are we going to get Ronda and Becky that we really, really want? You know, we saw some live, you know, even at Elimination Chamber, they showed how Becky went to a house show, jumped the barricade, you know, and attacked Charlotte. And apparently then also reported that Becky twisted her knee and hurt it even more. But I just think no matter what, if she is injured and if this is true, she's utilizing every minute and every second she can to hold on to that spotlight. And Becky Lynch, in my opinion, is someone that you can put a company behind right now. Like, she can star anywhere. You can put her in any other company other than WWE, and she's someone you can build your company around. She's got the it factor. She's got the natural growth. Love her. I don't know if she's ever not been on the F5, minus maybe the first week. But no, definitely very well deserved. And I'm intrigued to see where the road to WrestleMania goes for Becky. I really do hope it ends with a Ronda-Becky match.
Yes. I mean, I think that's what everybody wants, just whether Vince is willing to let us have it.
Right.
All right. So third on the list is the Velveteen Dream, the newly crowned North American champion. He put on a fantastic match this week with Johnny Gargano. He continues to be a solid performer for NXT. He is still a big question mark if his gimmick will work as he moves, if he moves up.
True.
But I think they still need him down there. And yes. I think while he's down there, he's done really, really well to carry himself. He's gone from ultimate heel to ultimate babyface, but without having to change who he is, which is good.
Right.
But, you know, in the end, he's on this because he's the new champion. He put on a fantastic match, and he continues to be the anchor for NXT at the moment.
The anchor.
Boom.
Podcast. Brought to you by Anchor. Not actually a sponsor, just where we record from. No, totally agree. It was funny. Another example of I didn't see it coming. I didn't see Velveteen winning that belt this week. Makes you ask the questions. You know, what's going on with Johnny Gargano? You know, well, I know we talked about it a little bit earlier. Just kind of, you know, about call-ups and different things like that. But no, I think, you know, Velveteen, I absolutely agree. He's got a lot more things he can accomplish and do in NXT. Maybe he doesn't like that, but I think you can still have a great run as a North American champion. You can still have a great run as the NXT champion. You know, don't rush it and walk with it. And he's still very young, very talented. Make sure it's the right place, right time. So many young upcoming talent. I would hate to see Velveteen kind of come in and get drowned, you know, like a Bobby Roode or someone like that. So definitely welcome on the F5, and also congratulations to Velveteen Dream.
Speaking of call-ups, number two on our list is the performance this week of the NXT call-ups. Aleister Black, Ricochet, Evil DIY, Tommaso Ciampa, and Johnny Gargano.
They should call themselves Do It Myself.
Yeah. So they put on a good show. We're not sure what's going to happen with them, if we're going to see them on the regular or if this is part of some sort of invasion type thing or where it's going to go with this. But that being said, Ricochet, because part of the thing is that not every Raw and SmackDown viewer watches NXT.
Right.
So they don't necessarily know about Ricochet or Aleister Black or, you know, or these guys. So this is an opportunity for them to showcase. And I think that they all put on a great show. They all showed their strengths. They all showed their creativity. And, you know, we got a rematch. We have DIY versus the Revival, which is always great. We had the DIY versus the Bar, which was great.
Yep.
You know, we had Aleister Black versus Andrade Cien Almas, which you can't knock that either.
Not at all.
So we had all these great opportunities to see what's coming. I hope they're not coming yet. You know, where do they fit? How do you cram more talent in? We say this almost every week. You keep bringing them up. You know, we have, what's her face? The Lady of Wrestling.
No, Lacey Evans.
Lacey Evans, who just comes out, shakes her hand. And goes,
what was that? Like, come on.
I don't know. So
get out there, go wave and come back.
You know, it was recently announced that Ty Dillinger has requested his release from WWE.
I also heard that he was denied his release.
I think, you know, obviously AEW is probably calling his name.
Oh yeah.
So I think that it's unfortunate when you have all this strong young talent that people like Ty, there isn't a spot for them. As much as I like Ty, it's not there. But that being said, I don't want to, you know, take this F5 down a negative path. Those four guys put on great shows and great representation of what NXT is all about.
No, 100%. And, you know, what I hope it's not them being called up yet, because you got to be a little bit of, you got to be a little bit, you know, methodical in how you get those are four really big talents. And those can be four people that can, you know, star in the company. Take your time. I like how, what I'm hoping to take this as is that, to your point, you know, maybe the main roster audience doesn't know who it is. Maybe that's the perfect point. Hey, live television, millions of people. Here's our NXT people. You know, here's the NXT champion, North American champion, no longer, but, you know, and here's Aleister Black, former champion. Here's Ricochet, the craziest guy to ever be in a wrestling ring. You know, give him a little taste and then bring him back down. And hopefully some of those eyes on the main roster will go to watch NXT. You know, so I think that's really, really good, because it truly shows. And it's not the first time they've ever done it, but it was great. If you've never seen DIY versus the Revival in NXT, do yourself a favor. Go on the network, the WWE network, and definitely go watch that. They've had amazing matches battling for the NXT Tag Team Championships. I was very happy with it. I saw a lot of articles online, on YouTube, on Twitter, saying how it was a botch and it was a horrible... Ignore that.
The only botch was Triple H introducing them, but that's fine. That doesn't mean anything.
Still, look back at what he said. He didn't really botch anything. He just kind of maybe constructed, you know, the sentence differently, you know. Yeah. But like, even then, I would say if he continued with his sentence, no one would have caught that.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was great and thought it was amazing. A good little treat for those guys to come on the main roster and get that feel as well. I'm very interested to see, you know, DIY. What I hope for is they start telling that story a little bit about, you know, you see, you know, Tommaso Ciampa online tweeting like, hey, I knew he'd come around. But you guys destroyed each other. And now, if anyone knew the backstory, you know, the best friends in real life, Tommaso Ciampa was Johnny Gargano's best man at his wedding. Like, they've been friends for a long, long, long time. Very, very close. So you could almost pin it as, you know what? You pissed me off. You stabbed me in the back. So we had, brothers had to beat each other up. You know, brothers had to fight. But now we got it out of our system and we're good. Even if it's something as simple as that, it gives us something to not just go, Johnny just changed his mind one day. He wanted to kill you at one point. So... great call up. Great to see it. And hopefully we don't see too much of it. But if they wanted to do every couple of weeks, new call ups where, hey, by the way, here's this person, here's that person, definitely wouldn't be mad at it.
All right. So our number one, which I don't think needs a lot of discussion, given the fact that we've already talked about him, was the man of the week, Kofi Kingston. Put on great shows on the Gauntlet, put on a great show in the actual Elimination Chamber.
Yep.
He got his championship match coming up at Fastlane. So I think all in all, things are on the up for Kofi in the first singles run for a member of New Day. And so hopefully we'll see more of this support for the individual members without destroying the triple.
100%. And, you know, when we went over the Elimination Chamber and such, I know we talked about Kofi a lot. So I'd hate for him to be number one for us not to go so much into detail, but I don't think we need to. You know, with Kofi, I'm just trying to think. I think it was on YouTube, but it also was on Twitter. Go back and after the Gauntlet match, the New Day were in the back sitting down, you know, with Big E, Xavier, and Kofi. And they had, it was like about a 10 minute or so interview. And they were talking about it and everything else. And I'll tell you, it was the most passionate support that Big E and Xavier showed for Kofi, saying, like, this is the guy. Like, it was no jealousy or anything. It was, this is the guy. You know, he's like, he's our mentor. He's our guy. Like, we are a team together. We have his back no matter what. And if he wants to be champion, he can go be champion. And I think WWE for the longest time has really missed the ball on that. And to think that to no longer have a team or a tag team, it means that they need to break up. And I think the New Day, I hope, number one, they never, ever break up. But you can literally say, we're always a team, we're always brothers, but we can do our own things and we have each other's backs. You know, it's, and that's what they're starting to form. And I love that because it's like NWO, D-Generation X, you know, the Nexus, like so many different big, you know, big, what would you call them? Factions, but also even little teams. It's almost like, well, they're not going to be a team anymore. It's like, well, when Cesaro and Sheamus, they're not going to tag team for the rest of their lives. They're great singles competitors. Do they have to hate each other just to no longer be a team? You know, how about they can still be bros and best friends and be the bar, but they can go do their own thing too. And if they ever do need a hand, they know who to call out to. And I hope we see that in the New Day. You know, very, very happy, very excited to see Kofi's run and what this comes. I hope it's not a one and done, but if anyone deserves it, it's Kofi. You know, one of the most consistent people in the WWE, no matter what his spot, never complained. Company guy, you've always heard nothing but great things about him. New Day has turned into such an amazing thing where it doesn't matter about wins and losses and championships. The New Day's fun and everyone loves it. That's the perfect position you want to be in. Now let's have some fun with it. So I'm very excited for Kofi.
All right, so that rounds out our Fab Five. We had Dean Ambrose, Becky, Velveteen Dream, the NXT call-ups, and Kofi Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
So before we leave, I wanted to tackle one little quick conversation.
What's that?
Was popped up on Twitter, and then you responded, and then I responded. Was the announcement of D-Generation X in the Hall of Fame. So
right.
I wanted to get your opinions because I have differing opinions.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't want to drag it on too long because I think we'll have an opportunity at some point in time when they're all announced that we could have that Hall of Fame discussion.
Right.
But does it, for you, is this the right call?
So, no, it's not the right call.
Interesting.
Now, here's the thing. And just kind of going back, and I know, you know, so when I kind of tweeted saying, like, you know, very cool news, you know, there were always thoughts on who should the group go in before singles, but very well deserved. So for me, when I made that comment, number one, it's I'm not trying to win, but you kind of got to acknowledge what's in front of you. And no matter what I feel about it, they're going in. So I have to ask myself, are they Hall of Fame worthy or not? They are Hall of Fame worthy. They're D-Generation X. During the Attitude Era, doing a pinnacle time throughout the war, you know, the 83 weeks of the Monday Night Wars and everything else. Now, do they deserve to go in? Sure. Should they deserve to go in now? No. I think, you know, not only is there a plethora of individuals that outside of D-Generation X could have and should have gone in before them, but also I would have loved to have seen, you know, individuals. Number one, the New Age Outlaws, even as a team on their own. Billy Gunn can go in on his own, just in what he's done in his career as a singles, you know, smoking guns all the way to Billy and Chuck, all the way to so many different things. China, very taboo topic. She's going in now, which is great. You heard Triple H acknowledge her and say her name on television. So, but even her as an independent, Triple H as an independent on his own could have even gone in. X-Pac, as you know, 1-2-3 kid, hey, say what you want in the, you know, in the early to mid 90s, you know, the 1-2-3 kid defeating Razor Ramon. That was a huge, huge moment in the early days of Monday Night Raw. So, but on top of that, we can go into a whole list of other people who could have, or maybe should have gone in before them. So definitely agree. Could have been someone else, but I do have to look at it as they're going in, whether we like it or not. Do I think they're worthy? Yes.
So, you know, I'm surprised because I actually agree with you in that same idea. Do I believe they should go in? Yes. The same way that the NWO should go in, the same way right. that, you know, some other factions of that level. I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out for China. I think China should be on her own.
Yeah, very true.
I think this is very a safe true. Way of doing it.
So they never have to do her independently?
Correct. And so that for those who don't agree because of kind of how she left, they can just say, well, she's part of DX. We're letting DX in.
Right.
They're not going to give speeches to each individual member of DX.
No.
I also take issue because Hunter is still involved. It's the same thing with sports, or other sports. There should be some time when you're not in the ring for you to be considered part of, you know, to be inducted. And so I think that it's too soon. Hunter's going to go in on his own, the same way Shawn Michaels will go on his own.
And it'll be huge.
But I just feel like it's too soon for DX as a whole. I think at an anniversary point in time, sure. I just feel like the China, you know, Joan Lori deserves to be in on her own. Yes. And she deserves the spotlight, that despite how things ended, and in all honesty, I think she gets kind of the bad end of the stick because Triple H left her for Stephanie. And so she wasn't going to be comfortable with staying around. Right. And I don't think you can blame her. But I think that she's done enough. If you're going to put Beth Phoenix in for essentially the same reasons that China deserves to be in, and China did it first.
Yeah.
You know, I think that she should have been there first on her own. So that way they don't downplay the accomplishments and what she's brought to the women's division in a time where they weren't even remotely being taken serious.
Oh God. And you can even argue that China started the evolution. You know what I mean? Where she was the closest thing to female wrestling. And yes, female wrestling has been along for a long time, and there's been many, many tough competitors. And, you know, and not saying that I agree with it in the sense of, and what I'm talking about now is not your comment. I completely agree with your comment. I'm on side with that. You know, not say that I agree with, you know, when you look at the Stone Cold podcast that aired on the WWE Network with Triple H, and Stone Cold asked him, saying, will she ever go in? If so, yes. If not, why? And Triple H said, he's like, listen, you know, we are a company. You know, like, we have stocks, we have so many things, and we're branded a lot to kids. If we put, you know, what like, we're the one of the, whenever we're on TV or doing anything in the world, we're the number one trending anything in all of social media.
Yeah.
If we put her on a platform, we need to do so. We have to really think about, you know, people are going to Google search her, and it's going to come up with her sucking off a guy, her having sex, her, these are the things that your people are going to go and see. Now, so here's where I agree with that. I don't agree with, you know, you let Sunny in after she'd done porn. You know what I mean? So it's hypocritical to that sense. Yes, they have a big blow. China and Triple H used to be together, cheated on China with Stephanie. They're now married and run the company, kind of ran China out of the company. Apparently there was a lot of things. I think Sean Waltman, I could be completely incorrect and it was his statement or not, but I think he was on a Stone Cold podcast where saying that, like, she wanted a lot of money. Like, she had certain expectations that she wanted to be able to stay in WWE. And, you know, but with everything else, you totally agree. Outside of the controversy, not the important part. You know, they definitely deserve to go in. I completely agree with your theory of, let's see the Outlaws, let's see China, let's see, you know, like, hey, Sean Waltman, Xbox, 1-2-3 Kid, whatever you want to say, before then you get the group in.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as the Hart Foundation.
Yep.
You know, you're going to put in individuals before you put in the group.
Right.
And maybe you have a group wing where, you know, you talk about the group as a whole and their contributions. But I feel like if the individual deserves enough, they should get their own. Yeah. And I feel like they should be first, and then you bring in the group, because if you bring them in second, it's kind of like, well, yeah, well, we already did this.
Yeah.
You're downplaying their singles accomplishments because you went ahead and gave them the group first.
It's true. And that's the hard thing about Hall of Fames too, right? It's just, you know, there's always going to be some, and plus there's always going to be things that we don't, that's like Owen Hart. You hear around this time, everyone is screaming, why is Owen freaking Hart not in the Hall of Fame? Because his wife doesn't want him to and doesn't have permission.
Yeah.
Bret Hart wants him in the Hall of Fame. Everyone wants him in the Hall of Fame. In, you know, but she thinks it's putting his death on a platform, but it's complete opposite. And we think of that when we think of Owen Hart, but that's a second of reminder. We think of how funny he was, how great he was in the ring, how technical he was, how amazing of an athlete and performer he was. So, but maybe that can be a segment maybe next week. Maybe we talk about who we think should be inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there's you know, there's a definitely an opportunity to have that conversation. But we don't want to have it right now.
Nope. Not right now.
So that being said, that wraps us up for this. Keep in mind that tomorrow is Femme Fatale 21.
Right.
At St. Anthony's. I will be there with children in tow. So next week I will have my review of the show. I don't want to give a preview because this is my first ever Femme Fatale. I don't know what to expect. The names are familiar, but they're not all familiar.
Right.
And so I'd rather just wait and give the review after the fact. And then we can go from there.
Yeah, no, I'm going to gather some questions for you. I'm very interested to hear how it goes. Also, I owe you money, don't I? For March 22nd?
That is correct.
$31?
Yes.
Perfect. I will transfer you that very shortly. But no, thank you very much, everyone, for tonight. You know, we appreciate all of your love and support, and make sure to check us out on our social media on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at 613 Wrestling Podcast, and also on Anchor, Apple iTunes, and all of your favorite podcast apps. My name is Mark.
And my name is Kyle.
And I hope you have a great evening and a weekend coming up, and thanks so much for listening.
Take it easy.
Six, one, three, wrestling.